Welcome to season 3 of Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Tawny. We're so excited to be back. And we are also excited to be sponsored by Tempest for this season. Tempest is a program that helps you stop drinking and start feeling better. As of this spring, they have a brand new membership program that offers monthly content, community, and expert guidance. You can learn more about all of their different membership options right now by heading to jointempest.com.
We are huge fans of Tempest. We know what fantastic work they're doing to help people stop drinking.
Absolutely. And what we love about them is that they're also super inclusive of all communities.
Welcome to Recovery Rocks, everyone. I'm Lisa. And of course, I'm here with my podis.
Hello, it's me, Tawny.
It's your girl.
Today, we thought we would talk a little bit more generally and not so much on a specific issue. But, you know, now that we are multiple months into this pandemic and the lockdowns and everything that has been going on with our fight for racial justice and the changes in the economy, sort of how, what life's looking like today, stepping out into this new kind of 2020 world slash hellscape slash opportunity to do the right thing in this country. So we both had a lot of changes go on in terms of how we are, what we're doing and how we're doing it. So Tawny, you want to talk a little bit about what you're up to now and how that's changed and what's going on?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love hellscape. That's a really great way to describe. I'm still in New York City and it's been challenging for obvious reasons, but something personally that is just, I think specific to New Yorkers right now is just watching, you know, the liveliest city have there's nothing to do. And that's very just bizarre and weird and painful and many, many things. That's just been tough to watch. But I've had, like, we've all had a significant amount of downtime lately, and I've been leaning into a lot of writing. And my day job, it actually has transitioned into work from home as well. So like, I'm buckled in. Like, this is like my foreseeable future, is work from home now, and, you know, staying in my neighborhood and not riding the subway, which is very strange. As you know, as a former New Yorker, like, it's just very strange that the subway is not a part of my daily life right now. But I'm leaning into it. Leaning into working from home, leaning into the perks that come from it with, you know, I'm able to exercise more, I'm able to cook, things that I always wanted to do before, but I just didn't have the time. Like, you know how it is when you're in New York City and you're rushing from meeting to meeting and like going from work to like a co-working space to dinner with a friend and then an hour commute home. And then it's by the time you're home, you're at zero energy. And like that, the fact that is just gone. That's not a part of my life anymore. Like, my commute now is like if I work at 11, I could be in the shower at 10:55 and maybe put on a shirt, you know, maybe. But like that's wild that like that I'm able to do that. And so many people are working from home now. Like, I think I'm still digesting it. I think it's such a huge transition that I'm still digesting it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's for sure true. You know, I mean, my life has changed similarly being here in California. Obviously all of the speaking and traveling that I had been doing and had planned certainly for the spring, the summer, and even going into the fall is just like wiped out. So I'm here for the duration, which I'm incredibly fortunate and blessed to be able to be where I am because it's safe and it's beautiful. And, you know, I'm incredibly fortunate. At the same time, I'm really feeling at this point the grief of my old life. I'm grieving my, you know, one of the things when I moved out here after 30 years in New York and, you know, my family and friends in New York, is that, you know, one of the big things that made it fine to uproot that way was the fact that I traveled back to New York once a month. So I would be, I would see my mother once a month. You know, she's doing fine. She's in an independent living that also has other things if she needs more than that. She's 84 years old. And I had been seeing her for, you know, like a double overnight once a month. And the last time I was able to do that was February. And I won't be able to, I don't see myself being able to do that in 2020. So I'm literally going to go, you know, probably like a year without seeing my mother, who won't do FaceTime because she insists it's, you know, she's, it's too much for her. I talk to her every day, but, and I've talked to her every day ever since my dad got sick, which was, you know, now 7 years ago, that he got sick. And, you know, but it's a sad thing for me, you know, and my brother and my friends, obviously. Tawny, you were the last friend I saw when came out here.
Same.
But also, yeah, yeah. And it is, it's, there is this sense now that what worries me about me in this, you know, I've been clinging to the sober community as I do, but, you know, it's changed. Like I worry about, you know, how am I going to feel like the first time I do travel, going to the airport, what is that going to feel like? Mm. You know, I mean, this idea of stepping out into back into the world again has me nervous. I see people around me, you know, we're in Southern California and right now we're having a very big spike in COVID cases. And, you know, I see people around me, neighbors, and they're going to restaurants and they're doing all these things. And I'm like, I don't feel safe doing that. And then I start to stress out inside, like, am I not normal because I don't feel safe doing that? And does that mean I'm never gonna want to go shopping again? You know, there's just this uncertainty that is not something I do well with. I'm a plotter and a planner, mm-hmm. and I check things off my list, and I want to know what's coming. I don't like surprises. I don't like uncertainty in terms of, you know, of a day, of a month, of a year. You know, I am very much a creature of routine, and I'm worried about this routine of being home all the time, being like almost making me like a hermit for good. Like I'm hoping I'm going to be okay coming out of my hole when I finally do.
I relate to that so hard. I feel like I'm going to develop, or maybe have developed, some form of agoraphobia where,
right,
I just, the thought of getting on the subway scares the hell out of me right now, even though it's nowhere near as crowded. Like my partner rides the subway every day for work and he's okay. But it's just like, you know, like I like going, I go to events, I throw dinner parties. I love being around people.
We go to concerts.
I go to concerts. I go to theater. I mean, like I go to book signings. I mean, like everything that, like, we hang out in groups, right? So the thought of going to an event, you know, like going to a book signing, going to a concert, like these things that I just love to do, that scares the hell out of me. And like, by the time that's even on a bigger scale, I'm talking like, even having a couple people over for dinner or like having a barbecue, freaks me out. Yeah. And like, it's just kind of weird that like you and I feel this way. A lot of people feel this way, but then there's like this huge percent of the population that is just like not experiencing that at all. Like not social distancing, not wearing masks, not having this experience. They're still hanging out with their friends or going to the lake. They're like going on a boat ride. Yeah. And like, it's so weird. Like I'll be on Instagram and I'll see some of my friends from back home in Texas. And they're like on, like eight of them are on a small boat together. I'm like, what are you doing?
Right.
It's just like, I can't do that.
No, I know. I know. Yeah. And it's hard because it really has become this politically divisive thing. And, you know, like I will see and, you know, look, I know my politics, my everything, I'm, you know, not everybody's going to agree with anybody on everything. And we all have differences and we all come from different places. But when I see certain things like that, I think are like, eek, this is not a political issue. This is like, I'm worried about you and your family issue with what you're doing. And then I just, you know, when to keep my mouth shut and when to not, you know, it's very hard. And I'm trying to not engage in that kind of stuff at all. But, you know, I mean, people make comments. It's funny because a lot of, and, you know, just to go to social media, I'm avoiding social media as much as I can now, but I, you know, I'm still there, but I'm cut way back. And, you know, I get comments about wearing a mask that I take pictures with a mask on. Like, you know, I'm just not going to engage with that.
Yeah.
But it scares me because I'm like, how am I going to step back into this world? Like, how long is it going to be? What's going to happen? You know, and I don't mean to be like doom and gloomy about it, but it is something that we have to, you know, find our place in and find our peace in. You know, one of the things for me having now just like basically my, you know, the work that I do with law firms, it was all traveling and all of that. That's not coming back anytime soon. I'm doing some of it over video, but it's not like the same, you know. And I feel like I was getting like pulled down, you know, by the whole thing and by my own like self-sabotaging in my head. And that's when I really, you know, started thinking about getting more serious about writing a second book. And now I've started that process. And I'm working on writing fiction. And I'm like, for the first time since, I think for the first time since I finished Girl Walks Out of a Bar, I'm like, you know, at that point where like I'm waking up in the morning thinking about this book and, you know, getting excited about, like, I went out on a walk. I've been doing these walks in my neighborhood because I don't go to the gym. I don't do any of that stuff. And as I'm walking, I always listen to music and just like, I'm upset. I'm starting to think about the story and I'm starting to build out this character. And yesterday on my walk, this whole new character came into it. That's going to be a big role. And I got all excited. Like, it made my day. And so I'm finding joy. Like, that's a joy that if I was traveling all over the place still, I wouldn't be working on a fiction book. You know, I would be doing all my work stuff. So, you know, I mean, it's an unfortunate circumstance to be trying to do something different in, but we have to find our ways, you know, and who knows if it'll ever go anywhere or do anything, or if, you know, how it'll go, the writing process. I mean, but, you know, we've got to find our places where we can, you know, have those sparks of joy.
It's, you know, that's a really good point of, with all of that, like, so you and I are, I would say, nonfiction writers. We write nonfiction. We write essays. You wrote a book, a memoir. Like, we are nonfiction gals. But it's so interesting that you and I have been drawn to fiction during this, where I'm only reading novels right now. Like, the thought of reading nonfiction, I'm like, hell no. Like, I am already so plugged into the news and social media and like actual people. Like, I need a fake world to bury my head into right now. And I find so much comfort in that because it is a healthy form of escapism where I get lost in these made up characters and made up worlds. And so I'm wondering, you know, as a writer, do you find comfort in creating the fiction?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I am, and I'm still figuring out how to do it because I am creating this world and I'm starting to see this world or this protagonist world and the people in it in my head. But because we are such nonfiction people, and I really, and I love what you said about you're reading fiction now, because I need to get back to reading fiction to escape like that. But because I have felt this need to be like, it's almost like it's such an indulgence to read fiction when there's, you know, when I should be learning so much and reading so much. And so I have been in sort of my work in trying to become an ally in for racial justice and all that is coming in now. I've been, you know, reading books like White Fragility. Mm-hmm. And I have been, you know, watching shows and doing all the things that I need to educate myself. And I'm also offering, I'm giving some talks for obviously for free to groups, to lawyers. Like one thing I thought I could do is give lawyers who are public defenders, legal aid, those kinds of lawyers who represent underserved populations and underprivileged populations in getting justice. I'm doing programs for them on how to take care of themselves so that they can be the best person they can to show up for their client. Because the people who are representing people who are getting arrested in the protests and people who have immigration cases that are all, it's having a big impact on the lawyers working with them. So I'm working with the lawyers to try to, you know, help them stay mentally healthy and all of that. But I have felt so like there has been so much in the nonfiction world that I was feeling like it's not okay to, you know, just read some fiction. And then I started picking up a couple of like mysteries and it helps so much.
It really does. And like, you know, to your earlier point of, you know, needing to read the luxury of reading fiction right now of, there is still so much to be learned from fiction. And
oh my God.
And
so
I'm learning that now. You know, I used to think I read memoir, I read nonfiction because I want to learn. And I just shut off novels. I was like, I don't have time for that. But I am finding myself learning from the, like, just writing wise, learning sentence structures from novels. Yeah. And even though these characters are made up, they still hold so much truth because they're people who are experiencing something, you know? So,
yes.
And I'm reading right now The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett. And, that came out a month ago and it's a novel about two light skinned black women, twins, who one of them passes for white and one of them doesn't try to pass for white. And it's showing the two different lives that these twin sisters have led. So it's like, I'm still able to learn and work on being an ally by reading fiction like this, you know?
You're right. You're so right. Yeah, totally. I have to read that book. I've heard really great things about that book.
Yeah, it's great. And she got a seven-figure HBO deal already, like within,
good.
Like the book came out like early June and then like she already has an HBO deal. Like it's really powerful.
That's fantastic. But yeah, I mean, making up worlds too in trying to write fiction is so new. Like I remember when I was writing my book, my first book, or Girl Walks Out of the Bar, when I was writing that, people would say to me, you know, in my writer's group, when I would read pages, I was in this writing group or workshop where we read pages every week.
Oh, I know that workshop.
Be like, oh, yes, you went to it too, Jenny Bell's workshop. Yes. And people would say like, well, you should have her, but she should do this or she should say that. And I would be like, but I didn't do that. I didn't say that. It's my memoir. It can't be things I didn't do. And now I'm realizing this protagonist I'm creating can do whatever the hell I want her to do. And I can introduce this character who could be whoever I want him to be.
That's true.
And it's a whole different thing. It's kind of mind blowing. But yeah,
I'm so excited to read your fiction and see.
But well, you say that now.
No, I mean you are a great writer. I mean, you literally wrote a book.
Wow.
And you've written, published many essays. So like, and I know that you'll be a great fiction writer too. I'm excited to read that. Like, I've been reading some historical fiction lately, and it's making me think, like, if I were to write fiction, it would probably be something like a historical fiction. I'm like, if Jim Morrison never died, this would have been his
life. Would that be amazing?
Yeah. Like
think about how your brain would feel writing that. Yeah. Like, it's exciting.
Well, I was like, right? I read Rodham, which is, it's about if Hillary Clinton never married Bill. And so, like, the whole time I was reading it, I was like engrossed in the story. But then when I would close the book to do something else, I'd be like, who do I know too much about that I could write a book like this? So I was like, Jim Morrison. Like, I've been researching.
Oh my God.
I have been researching Jim Morrison since I was like 8 years old. Like, I know way too much about him. I could definitely
fiction. I sent you his high school picture.
Yeah. Yes. Like, I was like, I could fictionalize Jim Morrison. Like, that would be my easiest bet.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's great. That's great. So yeah, I think that, you know, we'll be going into this different kind of thing. I would imagine as we do ultimately start stepping out of this at some point, you know, it's just going to be baby steps. And like more than ever, I feel like, you know, in recovery, the biggest thing, you know, for me, it was accepting what I can't change, right? And figuring out how to change what I could and, you know the difference and turn over what I can't control. And that sort of basic, that's the serenity prayer, which is God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I find myself right back to basics with this, you know? And I think I can't wait until I can actually hug you again, until I can walk into a 12-step meeting or a She Recovers retreat or something like that. I'm doing a lot of this stuff online, which is great, but it's not going to be that sense of community. And I have to just really know that it's gonna be okay. Whatever it is, it's gonna be okay. It's gonna take time, a long time.
You're right. It's gonna take time and is taking time. And our recovery has absolutely prepared us for these huge transitions of the one day at a time, 1 minute at a time sometimes.
And a lot of the idea of replacing fear with faith. That was something Marianne Williamson, I believe, wrote. But like, I think about that, you know, because I can really go down a rabbit hole of, I am never going to see my mother again. You know, I don't know when I'm going to see my brother and my sister-in-law and my niece and nephew. And that will spark fear in me, like, and also sort of self, like, well, if you hadn't moved to California, you know, you wouldn't be in this position, and you're selfish, you did a selfish thing, and now you can't take it back, and this is your punishment. And right, I go there. Yeah. That's where my brain goes. And I have to, you know, let go of that. But I also have to replace that fear of I'm never going to see my mother again with faith that I will. You know, it's not going to be on my terms, but, you know, recovery is accepting and living life on life's terms. And just trying to put, you know, each day one foot in front of the other and do the right thing. But I did not think at the outset of this. And when you and I first talked, even as recently as when we talked about the anxiety of going grocery shopping.
Yeah.
You know, that seems like old, right? Like now it's there's a whole different level of what are we doing? Where are we at? What's going on in our reality? I feel like you said, like you were afraid of, like, am I going to get agoraphobia? Like that is closer to where I feel now. But the only way to not have that happen, and the only way to, you know, be able to take care of ourselves and support each other, is talk about it. If I internalize, and I think that's why I felt like I wanted to talk about this on the podcast, because, you know, if I internalize that and don't spit it out and say, shit, we've been behind closed doors for how long? I'm paranoid that I'm going to get sick, or I'm going to bring it home and my husband's going to get sick, or whatever, and I'm afraid I'm gonna never want to go out again. If I keep that inside and bury it, it's gonna eat me alive. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to spit it out and say it, and then I can look at it and examine it and go, well, you know, that's not necessarily true. Now you can use your tools and figure out, you know, how you just accept what you're going to have to accept for now. And that's, I think, a very, you know, we have to spit it out, because, you know, it's along the lines of, you know, you're only as sick as your secrets, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's like, if our recovery has prepared us for anything, it's life on life's terms, which is exactly what's happening, where it's, you know, things are progressing one way and then they regress, and you think things are going to happen one way and then it happens a totally different way. And it's
right.
Like, you just moved from literally across the country to start a new life. And that was already a huge adjustment. Like, and then like that was huge. And then, you know, then you're settled in and you're like getting in the swing of things. Like, you found your community and like things are good. And then it's like, bam, here's this other thing that you have to deal with now. And not just you, everyone's dealing with
it. And we're the lucky ones.
We are.
Right. And we are the incredibly, incredibly fortunate ones. So yeah. What has your, what's your music been telling you these days? What have you been listening to?
I have been living in the 90s. I think I've told you about this.
Still in the 90s.
I'm still in the 90s. I'm still watching Melrose Place, because every season has 32 episodes and they are 45 minutes. So I started watching Melrose Place in March. It is now July and I am halfway through season 4.
You know what I'm watching now?
What?
Nurse Jackie.
Oh, I've heard good things about that. That's very you.
Oh my God. Well, she's a pill addict.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, I'm not feeling triggered by it, but.
Well, I think there's something like Melrose Place is being in the 90s is, it's kind of like it's the fiction thing. It's like, I can escape to this other world of acid wash and big hair and screeching guitar solos. And it makes me feel better. And it's like, it's the same thing with music. I'm listening to like Billboard Top 100 from 1995. Like, I'm finding a lot of comfort and nostalgia right now. There's, even like, I was so, so, so excited for Chromatica, for Lady Gaga's new album.
Yeah.
And I'm not obsessed with it. And this is her first album that I'm not obsessed with. And it's a club album. It's full of dance music when I'm like, this isn't for me.
Oh my God. That is so funny that you say that, because I was going to say, I am obsessed with Lady Gaga's Chromatica.
Really?
I've been listening to it like, right. Yeah. Because it is like, it's nostalgic for me, like club music. It's totally like you like go out dancing music. I mean, I only listen to it when I'm out on a walk. I don't listen to it like hanging around the house. But I'm like, oh, transport me back to, you know,
that is so
bopping
funny.
Around like a lunatic.
I'll listen to it when I'm working out, but it's not like her other albums have like the lyrics have been so profound and like you can just sink your teeth into analyzing the lyrics. Yeah. And I can't do that with Chromatica. And I'm like, it's just not, you know how much I love her and how deeply obsessed I am with her. So it pains me to not be obsessed with this album. But
well, at least I'm obsessed for you.
You know, thank you. And I definitely listen to Rain On Me a lot. Like, I do love Rain On Me.
Yeah.
It's very fun. And the video is so pink and fun.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's where we're at. Anything else you want to add before we wrap? I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer on this episode, but I think it's important that we talk about what we're feeling as we go through and try and navigate this, you know, new world that we will be in. And we have to keep our expectations managed. That's the other thing.
There's our perfect time to quote our song, Lisa, Gin Blossoms. If you don't.
I just heard it the other day.
If you don't expect too much from me, you may not be let down. Hey, Jealousy by the Gin Blossoms. That I
Yeah.
That lyric just clings to my ribs like oatmeal.
Yeah.
Like it just like fills my soul.
Yeah. It's true. But it's true. We all, and we say, you know, high expectations, low serenity.
Yes.
So we keep them manageable.
If you don't expect too much from us, you may not be let down.
Well, thanks for letting me air it out.
I am always here for you no matter what you need, Lisa. You can air anything out with me.
I love you.
I love you.
All right, everybody. We will catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Tempest for making season 3 of Recovery Rocks possible. You can find my work at tawnylara.com, TawnyLara. Find me on social media at Tawny M. Lara, and you can follow my blog at sobrietyparty.com, sobrietea. Lisa, where can we find your work?
You can find my work on my website, lisasmithadvisory.com. You can also find me on social at Girl Walks Out, and you can find my book, Girl Walks Out of a Bar, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any other book-selling websites.
And make sure to click subscribe whenever you're listening to our podcast. You can get new episodes from Lisa and I every week directly to your phone.
Exciting.
In your pocket, like Alanis Morissette.
And then if you like what you hear, please rate us and review us. And thanks so much again for listening.